So the for those who didn't get a chance to be here the last time, so the approach to trying to do is to divide the conversation into two parts. One is a halachic idea, which is connected maybe loosely to the parsha, if necessary, give myself that leeway. And the other one is a thought, a machshava thought on the parsha. So just in the halachic concept, I saw after the whole story where Yosef meets reveals himself to the brothers, and they go back to Yaakov and tell him the whole story, he gives them a warning, al tigur zubadorach, don't be rugged as anger, don't be an anger while you're going. So Rashi brings multiple explanations. What exactly does that mean? One means, they're going to have to spend the whole way back fighting. It was your fault, don't do that. Let's move on the fault issue, let's move away from the fault issue. That's one expression Rashi says. Maybe we'll talk about that in the Machshava part. But then he says, a different thought, he says, don't get too involved in having a learning discussion while you're traveling, because you'll end up that the road will be angry at you. In a sense, it'll sort of like overtake you, because you're not going to keep an eye. You're not going to keep an eye on while you're traveling properly. I imagine, in the modern version, the person's driving the road, and I once witnessed this reality of two guys driving in a car, and they're getting into a good Talmudic argument, and they're really yelling at each other. At one point, he says, takes his hands off the door, and says, no, you're wrong, I said, al tirgus ubadarach. That's what Chazal meant when they said, al tirgus ubadarach, and then you get involved in Dvar Lochem. What's interesting that Yerushalmi comes along and says, that's two explanations that Rashi brings. Yerushalmi comes along and says the exact opposite. Al tirgus ubadarach means, don't travel and not discuss talk and learning. He says, because otherwise, the person's traveling, it's not necessarily so safe. You have the learning going on, that acts as some type of a safety mechanism. Torah protects us while we're learning, and we don't want it to be dangerous. So it shouldn't be dangerous, so you should learn while you're traveling. And that's the Yerushalmi, the exact opposite the way Rashi brings. So the Gemara actually touches on this concept. The Gemara says that the answer is just a little bit of both. You should be learning, but it shouldn't be too in-depth, because you're afraid you're going to get distracted. So the Yerushalmi's point is, we have a concept that all of the roads, general traveling in those days, was considered becheset sakana. It was in danger. It was dangerous. And that's why Chazal instituted the concept of tefilas haderech. And tefilas haderech is the Rosh says, the reason why Chazal instituted this concept of when we travel, we should say a special tefillah for safety, is because it was always considered dangerous to travel. And that's why many of the halachas of tefillas haderech were developed based on that. It's only for persons traveling a certain distance outside of the city, because near to the city, in general, it wasn't so dangerous. The dangers that they were grappling with, in general, were two. Was the wild animals and the listim, the highwaymen. They were called highwaymen for a reason. Because out near the city, they're not going to be plying their trade attacking people, but as they get further out, people were not safe. So it had to be a certain distance. Because also this was actually not so significant. There was a person traveling 4 mil, which means 8,000 amas, translates to somewhere between 2 and 3 miles. That's already considered enough. You're outside of the city that it could be considered dangerous. What's interesting nowadays is what the person grappled with now, how does it translate into modern terms? So Chazal gave it had to be at least a distance of a parasa. The person has to be traveling at least that distance to be chayiv in tefillas haderech. Nowadays, even when a person's outside of the city, we don't have the type of danger. First of all, the general, the chayus roos are not really, attacking us for the most part. There's a story, notwithstanding the story about a fellow who was making fun of tefillas haderech, and next thing he knew, a bee flew into his window and started buzzing around his head, and he almost had an accident because he's focusing on this bee. Okay, but the story aside, in general, we're not dealing with. I mean, I don't know about you, but maybe the deer running across the street in front of your car might be dangerous nowadays, but highwaymen also not. So how does it translate into modern terms? So it's interesting. The Poskim go multiple ways in this issue. Some Poskim come along and they say that really, we should be saying tefillas haderech nowadays for a totally different reason. Accidents, right? Accidents, the car accidents are quite dangerous. Every time a person gets in a car, even inside of the city, a person should say, Russian, please keep me safe from the danger of getting into an accident from a drunk driver. I don't know. People not driving safely. Theoretically, it should be relevant even inside of the city. So some places say, really, I would like to institute saying tefillas haderech inside of the city, but we can't make up our own new halacha. So you can say it, obviously you can say it without saying the bracha, you know, it's a tefillah, but to say with the bracha, so you it was only instituted to say it outside of the city. Therefore, even though theoretically the issues which Chazal were addressing are not relevant, there are other issues which are relevant, so of course we're going to keep doing it because of that. Rosh Hashanah grappled with this the other way, and this is a very common issue in the greater, you know, in the East Coast, is Chazal said it's a distance of a parson because when you're out on the high road, it's dangerous. If you're near a city, it's not. But what about if you're out on the high road, but you're not so far from it, there's cities along the way, not too distant from the road. It's a populated area for the most part. So are you mechuyav to say tefillas haderech in that situation? And Rosh Hashanah basically said no. So this comes up, you know, the question Rabbi Edomer Zatzal, the Rav in Silver Spring, you know, I discussed with him a few times. Do you say tefillas haderech going from Washington to Baltimore? And he was of the opinion of that no. At any point in time you're traveling from Washington to Baltimore, you're traveling within or fairly close to a populated area, within a parse of a populated area. So there's no reason that you would have this concept of that it's becheset sakana. Right? According to the argument that we said before, that the real concern nowadays is the accidents. Well, majority of accidents happen near your house, because most majority of the time you're near your house anyway. But this is the road you're taking. You would argue to say it even in our situation, but for that reason. And that's sort of Rosner went that way. Rosner said really we should be saying it because of the car accidents, but we can't make up our own tekana. But at least when you're outside of the city, you would do so. On the other hand, Rosh Hashanah held, and the editor was Webber Epsak. I was in that now. So the question is, so your person's traveling to Baltimore, so you're not going to say. Traveling to New York, at some point in time, the area does get more sparse, and we would assume that you would say at that point in time. Some point in time, you're going to get out there. Right? So what is that? Where is that point? And so that's not so clear. So let's address maybe one other halachic issue. So at what point are you supposed to say Tefillas Haderech in the travel? So the Gemara says it's like Dibbe Parsa. So Rashi understands the Gemara differently. The issue is not how far you're going, but how far do you have a right in your trip, how long the trip is going to be, to say Tefillas Haderech. Rashi says you have the first parsa. You must say it in the beginning of the trip. And you have the first parsa to say it, and that's it. So according to Rashi, you better get to figure out whatever this point is exactly when you're supposed to say Tefillas Haderech. It better be very well calculated, because you're going to lose the opportunity to say it with a bracha after that point. We do not pass them like Rashi, but it is mentioned that it is proper. We hold that as long as you still have a parsa left of your journey, you may say it. So you don't have to be so perfect in that calculation. But it is preferred in halacha to be concerned about Rashi Shita to say it as early as possible in the trip. Halacha says, the more says you should say it by midah. You should say it's standing. So the more explained, it doesn't mean standing. It means standing still. It means stopping. It's preferred to say it because you're focused better. Unless you're traveling with a group and they're not going to wait for you, and then you're going to be worried about not being with the caravan, and then that itself is going to be a distraction. We don't want you to be distracted. We want you to be focused. So a person's a passenger. The person can say that's no problem. He can say it's, you know, even though when he's traveling and is moving, that's not a problem. The driver, on the other hand, is while he's driving, he's distracted. It would be preferred a person... So when if he's the driver, to find the place to stop and say it. Now, that being said, pulling over to the side of the road is not necessarily the safest place. So I personally, when I'm traveling to New York, from Silver Spring to New York, which we do once in a while, you know, often enough, so I don't, either I'll pull off into the rest of the Maryland house, I wait till the Maryland house, because that's north of Baltimore already, so it's already getting more sparse, but it's in a safe place to pull off. Or I'll pull off maybe on the side, but pulling off the shoulder, my wife is not very happy with me pulling off onto the shoulder. If a person can't do that, a person would say it while he's driving. A person is allowed to say it while he's driving.
The Maryland house is not considered an issue that would potter you from the...
No, because you're already further enough away from the issue that you left from. So the fact that you stopped in a city along the way wouldn't potter you. It's an interesting question. Let's say a person is traveling his trip takes multiple days. So this halacha that you must. So there's another step in the halacha is that you must. You can't say it until you started traveling. You're davening. Now the Taz brings that you may say it even when you're still in the city. And the way we apply that halacha l'maisa is that the first day that you're traveling, you first start traveling and then you say it. If you're stopping, it's a long trip which takes multiple days. if you stop, the next morning you may say it where you are, because it's not really where you haven't reached your destination. You just stopped for that day. Then you may say it wherever you are. You don't need to start traveling to say it. Okay. What last thing I want to talk about, this, the shear of a parsa, is that based on distance or based on time? Of course, the relevant question nowadays, they traveled by foot, so we know that it took 72 minutes to travel a parsa. So, okay, 72 minutes. So do we translate nowadays into a 72-minute trip by means by car? That's many, many miles. Or by train, whatever it is. Or do we define it by distance? So the way I understand it, the majority of places say we still define it by distance, not by time. There is a Sefer Zichron Yehuda from one of the Garish Rabbanim, which he suggests that nowadays on the train or on the car, you should calculate it by time, which would come on a fascinating aloha, according to him, that if a person gets on a plane and flies from Washington to New York, the trip is less than 72 minutes. You wouldn't say Tfilas HaDerech even when you're on the plane. My understanding is that you pass it and you would say it. Now, when do you say it on the plane? This is the last point, then we'll go to the Mashoba part. When do you say it on the plane, on the flight? So we say that you're not supposed to say it when you're still in the city. See, if you have an airport which is outside of the city, which used to exist once upon a time, right? So you would say it on the way to the airport. You only say it once a day. So I already said my tefillah is there for today. But if nowadays many airports are inside of the city, or the city has expanded to reach meet the airport, so you say, you have to say it when you start traveling. So there's two approaches to it. One approach is you have to say it's by takeoff. As soon as you take off, you've started your trip. You've left. Until you're on the ground, you're just basically going in this, around on the ground inside of the city. That's not travel. The travel is the moment you take off. Now, but you're supposed to say the beginning of the trip, within the first parsa, preferably. So that gives you, for the moment of takeoff, so you have to, when do you leave? You leave, right? It doesn't give you so much time to say it. So you're supposed to say it when you leave when you're 10 tefachim off the ground. Like as soon as you go off, you're 10 tefachim off the ground, 40 inches. Right? So you're 10 tefachim off the ground immediately. Immediately say it at the moment of takeoff. That's theoretically the best. So Rabbi Yaakov itself said, he would suggest that you can start, once you start actually going down the runway to take off, that's already considered you're in travel, and you can say it from that any point along that journey.
Otherwise, first class would have to say it before the coach class.
That's an interesting question. I have thought about that. When exactly? Especially in a large plane. Okay. That's the Altirgus of Badarach, the Tfilas HaDerech part of the shir. I want to talk about the just looking at the interaction between Yosef and the Shvatim, and Yosef reveals himself to the Shvatim, and here he's and. There's so much written about how the sensitivity of Yosef to the Shvatim. The Pasuk says that Rashi points out they were embarrassed. He sent all the Mitzrayim out. They're being embarrassed. He called them close. He hugged them. He did so much to heal this rift between them. And he says to them, it wasn't your fault, the Baruch Hu was the Baruch Hu's plan. So clearly there's a tremendous godliness in Yosef. He's able to rise above what they've done to him, which is, we can't contemplate what it means to be sold into slavery in that world. Maybe the closest thing we have, the stories, we have the people, the story of the Holocaust, they were slave labor. Imagine selling a brother into the camp for 6 years. He comes out and says, it wasn't your fault, because I was there, I was able to save a lot of lives. We have no way to comprehend what Yosef did. But I want to talk about the Shvatim. If you look at the Shvatim, what was their complaint about Yosef? What was the issue? They said to him, "Hamalotim lechaleinu, mashaltim shalbanu." Do you think you want to be the melech over us? Right. So he ended up being the melech over them. He was the marshal over them. They didn't like that. So why are they accepting it now? So you could argue. I guess. Just practically, they had no choice, And well, he's the boss; he's got the food. So, as the saying goes in English, there's hot the day or hot the day. If you have the money, you get to decide whatever you want. But it doesn't seem like that. That was the interaction. Seems to be that they eventually were able to come together. And how did they do that? Why did it bother them originally that Hamalotim lechaleinu, Mashaltim shabona? And now they're saying, okay, no problem. Hamalotim lechaleinu. You should be. You're in charge of us. That we're okay with that. So the Sfas Emes has an interesting reference. He takes us back to the beginning of Parshas Vayetze, and Yaakov is leaving to go on his way to Lavan, and he comes to the Beis Hamikdash, And the pasuk talks about that he takes from me'avnei amokum, and eventually he takes the evan. So Rashi points out from Chazal, is it multiple stones or is it one stone? So Rashi reads from Chazal, that Chazal say, well, that the different stones were fighting to be positioned under Yaakov's head. And eventually Hashem merged them into one stone. The Medrash takes it a little bit further. He says that it was 12 stones specifically, and that Yaakov actually did a test. He said, if these 12 stones will merge into one, then I know that I will be able to fulfill my mission to go and bring the 12 tribes into existence. And if not, it's not going to work. He made a test. So he knew there was going to be good Shvatim. Rashi brings that the Moos knew that there's going to be 12 Shvatim. So Yaakov apparently knew it's going to be 12 Shvatim. And he took 12 stones for the test. Chazal continues, says they were fighting. Each one wanted to be the one. So here you have at the moment of conception of the concept of the 12 Shvatim, there's 12 entities fighting for something. And eventually they merge into one. And that's going to be the paradigm of how the Shvatim work. The Shvatim are not going to work by we're all lovey-dovey and all one. They're going to be Meriva. That's written into the DNA of the reality is going to be, there's going to be this Meriva, there's going to be this disagreement, there's going to be problems. They're going to rub against each other in the wrong way, and eventually they're going to become one. So Sosemis takes that reference, he says, and that's what happened over here. He says, the only way that's possible to happen is when you have a machlokes l'shem shemayim, when the disagreement is l'shem shemayim, is for a valid purpose. The argument was, I want to be the one to be mishamash the tzaddik. I want the tzaddik to put his head on me. So what does it mean he put his head on me? It means I'm going to be in a certain sense, he's giving over his message, the tzaddik's head is his message, he's giving over the message to me, and I'm going to take it and run with it. So, in this context, there's a beautiful letter from Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. So he talks about the concept, we talk about the concept of learning Torah Lishma, Torah for its own, for its true sake. So he says, what does that mean? So that means not learning Torah passively. That means you learn Torah, and you're learning with somebody else, you get into a good fight. You give it all you've got. You think that the Pshat and the Gemara is this, and he's wrong, you're going to use all of your effort to prove to him that you're right. Every ounce of your intelligence is going to be saying why you believe that your Pshat and Gemara is right. You bring him one proof and he answers that, you bring a second one, and you keep trying. He uses a Yiddish word called giftig. Giftig means, with the intensity. That's saying it lightly. Okay, so now you've been fighting for half an hour, and of course you really get all worked up and your emotions are, worked up, and you're really getting all into this, and you really feel very strongly about your position, and afterwards you realize he's right. The other fellow is right. So what do you do at that moment? So the most of us, the most we can usually offer at that moment is, I hear. Say with the full mouth, you know what? Thank you so much for giving the pshat. I'm so happy that we figured it out and that you're right and we now know pshat. No. I'm not going to say that. I'm going to say, I hear. I hear means I lost. And that's it. He said, that's when you find out whether your goal was Torah Lishma. Your goal was to find the truth of Torah, which you can find out by now. Baruch Hashem, we now know the truth. I'm happy. What does it do with me? Where's the ego involved in this thing? Or the final result is, okay, that the issue was me, so I'm not really excited the fact that you were right and I was wrong. Especially when I've been giving it my all for the last hour. So this is how he describes. So that's the difference between when you have a machloikis. The word machloikis is a chalukah. It's a division. Your separate parts, and the word for shalom is you became one. That is the process. The process of Madafka is like this. So I thought you'd just share with you. There's a beautiful thought. I once heard this from a Rabbi Israel Tauber from Muncie. Usually, he's very involved in Shalom Bayis. A tremendous Talmud Chacham. So I once was traveling together with was a bus driver. Actually, told me he used to be the private driver for Rabbi Tauber. So tell me something interesting that you heard from Rabbi Tauber. So I'll tell you an interesting story. He said, I have Shalom Bayis issues. He shared some of his Shalom Bayis issues with me, which I didn't really want to hear, but he shared it anyway. Then he tells me that, I said, do you ever discuss this with Rabbi Tauber? Because he wrote a book on Shalom Bayis. He says, he told me the following analogy. He says, did you ever see, he asks, tells him it's Yitzchak, I think. He says, Yitzchak, did you ever see where they polish diamonds? He says, no. He says, I'll tell you how it works. You have a person who's an expert, he knows exactly how to take a diamond, and they put it on the place where they want to divide it into. They put tremendous pressure in it, they rip it apart into two pieces. Okay, now you have two raw diamonds. What do you do now? You take the two sides and you have to polish them. What can polish a diamond? Diamond is the hardest substance that there is. A diamond can polish a diamond. Which diamond? The other half. So they take the two halves and they rub them against each other. And the result is a beautiful polished diamond. So he says, the worship took man and Adam and Chava, they're one, ripped them apart, and now he rubs them against each other. And the final result is a polished diamond. Conflict is necessary. So that's what makes us grow. That challenges. That's what you get into a fight. He said the first half is also necessary for Torah Lishma. I need to argue with you. I need to say that maybe my pshat is right. I need to put all my effort into it, because that'll force you to come more clear also. We're both going to become more clear what's important, what's not important. But the second half is also necessary. So the goal isn't to have this wonderful, sweet, comfortable relationship with no issues. The goal is to have issues. Don't tell your wife they said this, right? Right? And work them out. And you grow from that. We all grow from that. We become bigger, better people. So the purpose of the Machlokes is this process. And I think that's the point that the Shvatim originally didn't see what the goal. And they're able to say at the end, you know what, he was right. They're able to give that Moedah L'Emes, you know what, he's right. We're going to accept him at that point in time. Okay, I think we have to bench. Okay, very good.